Johnston and Johnston versus Conseco. John Jerk. Mr. Walter?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, Jason Walters for Conseco Life Insurance Company, the appellant in this case. At its heart, this case boils down to one very simple, straightforward issue that predominates in this appeal. And that is, under the terms of this flexible premium policy, when was a premium required to be paid? A very straightforward issue. The district court found that a premium was due and required to be paid on December 12, 2010. There is absolutely no support for that in the policy, and the district court cited none. For that reason, the district court's ruling was an error and is due to be reversed. And I'd like to go into this in quite a bit more detail. The policy at issue in this case is a flexible premium life insurance policy. Unlike a term life policy or a whole life policy, this policy did not have fixed premium due dates. In fact, the exact opposite was true. That's why it's called a flexible premium policy. The policy allowed the policyholder to determine when and how much premium to pay. The policyholder could pay $100,000 in a given year or not. Of course, that does not mean that the policyholder has free insurance for life. We all can suspect that. What the way the policy works is it has a cash value. And every month, there is a deduction from the cash value that sustains the policy. That is called a monthly deduction. The policy provides that when the cash surrender value is no longer sufficient to cover that monthly deduction, the policyholder is then required to pay a premium within 61 days, or otherwise the policy will terminate. And that is how the policy works. Nowhere in the policy does it require that a premium to have been paid on December 12, 2010. Nowhere in the policy did it require for a premium to be paid prior to the grace period, which is what that 61-day period is referred to in the policy. Now, what Jay and Johnston and Johnston has argued, Johnston and Johnston is a partnership, and what it has argued on appeal is that the court should look to generic definitions of the term grace period, which usually follow a due date, and therefore conclude that there was a due date prior to the grace period. But the fact that Johnston & Johnston is resorting to citing generic dictionary definitions of the term grace period, when there is an entire paragraph in the policy under the heading grace period that specifically addresses the grace period, Johnston & Johnston does not cite that. This case is more of a case about contractual interpretation than statutory interpretation. Here, the question is, when was Johnston & Johnston required to pay a premium? That is a contractual issue, and we should look to the contract to determine that. It's a very simple question. When was a premium required to be paid? Under the terms of the policy, a premium was not required to be paid until the end of the grace period. There was no fixed premium due date. And this is consistent with a case that's already been decided in Louisiana. It was decided in the Western District. It's called the Turner v. OM Financial case, cited at length in our brief. In that case, the court referred, that case involved a flexible premium policy, like the one in this case. In that case, the court referred to the end of the grace period as the due date. And indeed, in this case, when Conseco Life sent out the notices that it was required to send, It specifically said due date, February 11, 2011. That was the end of the grace period. In the Turner case that I mentioned, the court in that case found that the insurance company did not satisfy the statute because that grace notice was sent 60 days before the end of the grace period. In other words, the insurer, according to the Turner court, sent it too early. In this case, unlike in Turner, Conseco Life not only sent the 61-day grace notice, it also sent a grace notice on January the 6th, 2011, 36 days before the grace period expired, squarely within the 15 to 45-day window called for in the statute. The district court, in its opinion, relied on an Illinois case called Time Insurance Company v. Vick. In that case, however, it involved a term life insurance policy that had a fixed premium due date. It is completely an opposite to the case before the court here. In addition, the Illinois statute specifically required that the notice had to go out before the grace period. There is no such language in the Louisiana statute. And with respect, it would be improper for this court to write that language into the Louisiana statute. Instead, the Louisiana statute should be interpreted as written. And I think Johnston & Johnston on appeal must agree with that analysis because Johnston & Johnston did not cite the Vick case, which was one of the cornerstones of the district court's ruling. And to that point, I think it's important to note that in the complaint when it was first filed and in all the summary judgment briefings, and there were a lot of them, we had cross motions for summary judgment, Johnston & Johnston never argued that a premium was required to be paid on December 12th. Johnston & Johnston argued that the operative date for calculating notice under the statute was October the 12th, 2010. The district court then sua sponte found that the December 12th date was the operative date, even though neither party had asserted that date. The reason neither party had asserted that date is because there is no basis in the policy for finding that a premium was due or payable on that date.
Has any premium been paid since all of this?
No premium has been paid. There is a dispute between the parties regarding an attempt to pay a premium. Johnston & Johnston contends that its accountant called the insurance company after the policy terminated, and I forget the exact language in his affidavit. His affidavit is in the record, but basically called about finding out how much premium to pay to bring the policy in force, and he was informed that the policy had terminated and under the unique facts of this case had been placed on a death benefit extension. And we explained that in the brief. It was a result of a prior class action settlement that after the policy terminated, the insured was entitled to 183 days of additional coverage, during which time it was not allowed to make a premium payment. But there was not a premium sent to Conseco Life Insurance Company. In addition, Johnston & Johnston refers heavily to the Boring case. It was a 1923 Louisiana Supreme Court opinion. In that case, however, the court actually found that the notice period should be calculated from the termination date. In Boring, the insured had paid 50% of the premium payment and then signed a promissory note for the balance. And in other words, the insurance company gave the insured extra time to pay a premium. The court then found that even though the insured had been provided extra time, and even though the insurance company had provided notice prior to the previous due date, during that extra time, the insurer was still required to provide notice under the statute. Well, here, Johnston & Johnston is contending that the grace period constitutes extra time during which to pay a premium. Under the Boring case, the Boring case actually supports Conseco Life's argument that notice sent during the grace period is proper. And it can't be emphasized enough here that under the terms of this policy, there was no obligation to pay a premium until after the grace period began, and it had to be paid before the end of the grace period. If anything was past due, it was the monthly deduction. But it is abundantly clear from the language in the policy that the monthly deduction was not a premium payment. Those are two totally different things. And in fact, if the monthly deduction were construed to be a premium payment, Section 22905 would not even apply, because it does not apply to policies based on the payment of monthly premiums. So what we have here is a flexible premium policy that did not require any premium due dates, and the district court, without citation to the policy whatsoever, found that there was a due date on December 12, 2010. I would also add that Conseco Life's position is consistent with the Louisiana Rules of Statutory Construction. Statutes should not, under Louisiana law, cannot be interpreted in such a way as to produce absurd consequences. Here, with a flexible premium policy, the policyholder is in control of the cash value. The policyholder can pay premiums to increase the cash value, or the policyholder can withdraw funds from the policy or obtain a policy loan to decrease the cash value. So under the district court's holding, which would require insurers to provide the notice before the policy even enters the grace period, at least 15 days before, it would allow policyholders to simply wait until they are within the 15-day period before the monthly anniversary day when the cash value amount is determined, and then take out a policy loan or withdraw funds. That would trigger the grace period, and it would be too late for the insurer to provide notice. Certainly, if it's impossible for an insurer to comply with the statute, that would represent an absurd consequence. In addition, a second point that I wanted to emphasize is that even if the court were to find that Conseco Life did not satisfy the notice requirements of the statute, the insured here did not pass away until August 15, 2012. Therefore, the one-year period plus the death benefit extension of 183 days would have already run. The district court found that the default date was December 12, 2010. And Conseco Life would contend that the default date was actually February 11, 2011. But if you affirm the district court's ruling, then the default date is December 12, 2010. 1 year is December 12, 2011. You add 183 days. You still don't get to August 15, 2012. After that one-year period, the policy is deemed to automatically expire under several cases that we've talked about. Johnson & Johnson argues that, well, because they called the company to talk to them about making a premium payment and allegedly offered to make a premium payment, that that would allow the policy to extend beyond the one-year period. That, frankly, is a matter of first impression. I'm not aware of a case that has directly confronted that issue.
Now, if they made an attempt to pay and it was turned down, is that a...
Well,
this issue is that would somehow cause the delay period, the year and the other period to not...
I would say no.
I mean, does that, if they tried at least to pay and you guys turned it down, is that...
I would say no, Your Honor, and the reason why is because nowhere in the statute does it require the insurer to pay a premium, to accept the premium. Nowhere, and so there's no language to that effect in the statute. So if we're applying the language of the statute as it is written, the policy automatically expires at the end of the first year. At the end of the one-year period. And so even if there had been an attempt to pay a premium during the one-year period, there's no requirement in the statute that the insurance company accept it. And so if that requirement needs to be added to the statute, I would assert that that is the role of the legislature to add that requirement. But I would also like to underscore in conclusion here, and I would like to reserve the balance for rebuttal, but in wrapping this up, I would like to underscore that the court need not even reach that issue, because under the plain language of the statute and the plain language of the policy, there was no requirement to pay a premium on or before December 12, 2010. To the contrary, the policy did not require a premium to be paid until the end of that grace period. And I would reserve, unless there are further questions, I would reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McCarty.
May it please the court, Adam Cossey on behalf of the Appalee Johnson & Johnson Partnership. I would agree with opposing counsel that throughout this case, below and before this court, it's about one issue, and that is, can a grace notice sent after an insurance policy has lapsed for non-payment and informing the insured of how to cure the default strictly satisfy 22905's requirement for pre-premium due notice that provides them an opportunity to pay the premium when it becomes due? Opposing counsel has gone to great lengths in the briefs, and here today we look through of how the Idaho Supreme Court interprets certain terms, how the New York legislature has amended their statute, but they still haven't addressed the elephant in the room is, if the policy's already lapsed, how in the world can that notice possibly constitute pre-premium due notice? How can it possibly give the insured an opportunity to pay the premium when it becomes due if the policy's already lapsed? And Conseco has conceded that the policy lapsed on 12-12-2010, the date that the district court used for calculating notice.
I don't get that.
Judge King, ma'am.
I don't see that the policy lapsed until the premium wasn't paid.
Your Honor, this is a point that Conseco has conceded that as of December 12, 2010, there was zero cash value in the policy. It was insufficient to provide coverage. And they conceded that point under the Louisiana insurance regulations. Lapse in a flexible premium life insurance policy constitutes the day that the policy has a zero net cash value. So when it gets to zero and can no longer sustain itself, that's considered the date of lapse. That's based on the insurance regulations, and Conseco conceded that point in their brief, that lapse did occur on December 12, 2010. Since the notice can't, by its definition, predate the lapse, Conseco has tried to push the date farther back. It can't back up its notice, so it's trying to move the operative date forward. And there's a couple of problems with that. Mainly, it uses legally incorrect definitions of several terms that the district court construed. What I would like to do, if it pleases the court, is first address the calculation of a due date in the context of a flexible premium policy, then address some of the incorrect use of the terms in Conseco's argument, and then hit on the 1-year extension or the continuation that Judge Prado asked about. Conseco has led us to believe that this flexible premium policy is this strange creature that Louisiana's existing statutes can't address. It even goes so far in its brief to say that there's no such thing as a premium due date for a flexible premium policy. We know that can't be correct because if there was not a premium due date, it would not be terminated for lack of payment of the premium and we wouldn't be here. What happens is, while there's not a calendar date circled that every year on August 2nd a premium has to be paid, the policy works as it only continues as long as it has funding. In our brief, we said it was akin to a car in its gas tank. In the owner's manual, there is no requirement that on Wednesday of every week you have to put gas in your car. It's not preset, but it's only going to run for as long as there's gas in the tank. And that's what happened here. On December 12, 2010, that's the day that the tank ran out of gas. And that's what 22905 does, is it's the low fuel, the warning light, 50 miles to empty, that comes on before that happens. Under Conseco's definition, the low fuel light does not come on until 25 days after the tank is on empty. That doesn't serve the purpose. So this idea that there's not a premium due date in a flexible premium policy is not true. It's just not set on a specific calendar date, but the policy will necessarily require a premium due date.
Well, ordinarily, the premium due date is not a matter of mystery for the policyholder or the insured. If there's anything, I mean, exclusions get fought over, coverage gets fought over. I mean, insurance policies are just rife with ambiguity. But more time than not, the amount of premium and when it's due is rarely a mystery item, you know, because that's what the person bargains for, you know, to buy a policy to insure the life. not an uncertain deal. Well, I want some insurance that maybe I'm covered, maybe I'm not. So, I mean, this whole deal is atypical to the norm because the purpose of somebody buying the policy is for the security of they die, it pays off, et cetera. And typically the policy does have a backup if the premiums aren't paid to diminish it from the cash surrender. So this notion of mystery vis-a-vis, you know, when the premium due just causes a little pause here. I mean, you're sort of arguing in circles to say, well, it's never due until yada, yada, yada. So it kind of comes back to, we normally say, what did the parties bargain for, you know, with this contract? I mean, this is almost like saying you bought a policy, but there never was an expectation of having to pay any premiums. And then not paying any, then it just drains the cash surrender value. And then when that runs out, there is no more money, so it's lapsed. So then you say, well, what was the point of buying the insurance policy that you never planned to pay a premium, that you never expected to have any cash surrender value to cash it in, so that at the end of some period, you just got a piece of paper. So I mean, those concepts run counter to the typical contractual bargaining in a policy. Now I get it that this flex policy is a hybrid here, but at some point, at first principles, there has to be a bargain for agreement here that the premium is X and when there's a due. So come back to the inception of the policy. What exists, if at all, to sort of clarify what the understanding or intent was when this was purchased?
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. I think it's illogical to say there's never a premium due date, and that's what we were trying to point out in Conseco's arguments, that, well, we don't have a premium due date because this is a flexible policy. Obviously, there's an anticipation from the insured that they're going to continue paying premiums when necessary. There's also an expectation from the insurer that they're going to accept those premiums and exchange it for the continued provision of life insurance. Nobody bought this for a period. It continued on indefinitely as long as the premiums were paid. And you bring out an important distinction that since this is a flexible life policy, the insured does not know when that premium is going to be. They need someone to tell them because cost of insurance, things like that vary. They're going to change interest rates like that. They do generate, Conseco generates an annual report that says, here's what's happened in the last year. Nothing else changed. Your policy will run through 4 months from now or 5 months from now. But that doesn't comply with the notice requirement, which says, as of this date, when you no longer have value in the policy, you have to pay more money. And in truth, I agree with Conseco's analysis of this, of when the due date came. They cited in their brief on page 26, the question here is, when is it due? When did an obligation become created to pay another premium? What Conseco says on page 26 of their brief is, it was not until the cash value became insufficient to cover the net monthly deduction that J&J became obligated to make a premium payment. So what Conseco says is, when it hits that value and you can't pay your, that's when your obligation to pay again arises. Well, they go on to say on page 33, it is undisputed that the net cash surrender value equaled zero no later than December 12, 2010. So by what Conseco themselves is saying is your obligation arose when your value got to zero and you couldn't maintain coverage anymore. That's when you had an obligation to pay us again. And that date was December 12, 2010. So borrowing their own words, the district court was correct in saying that is when it happened. And it's also consistent with the Louisiana insurance regulations that define lapse for these particular policies as the day the policy reaches a net value of zero. Turning to that, more to the argument that Conseco is built their response to, is that while the policy lapsed on December 12, 2010, well, that is the day an obligation arose to pay another premium installment. We shouldn't calculate that because there was a grace period in the policy.
Let me stop you there before I lose my question. Counsel opposite just cited to us this Turner case, also out of the Western District. What's your response about that case?
Your Honor, that was not the holding of Turner. What Turner said was it dealt with a flexible premium policy where, and they were discussing, the issue came up with a grace notice sent during the grace period. And the district court never got to the issue of whether that was sufficient. What they said was, even if you could send a grace notice, it wasn't within the proper window, so that pretermitted any further evaluation or analysis of whether a grace notice was sufficient. The Turner Court said, never even got to that issue, because they said, even if we assumed your argument, it still wouldn't be timely. There's no need to get there. So the force of Conseco's argument has been, okay, that's the day it lapsed, but this grace period allowed extra time. So technically, you still could have paid us late during this period before we terminated the policy. So using a broad interpretation of payable used in 22905, that pushes the date back for operative notice. But the problem is that ignores Louisiana law on how we use several terms. What Conseco argued extensively, especially in the reply brief, is payable should means any time we'll accept payment. But that is not the definition employed by the Louisiana Supreme Court. In the Boren case, the Supreme Court said specifically that it is clear from the language of the Act that the operative date is when the premium is due on the policy. They used payable to mean the date that it becomes due as a clear definition. So Conseco's argument that we need to construe payable more broadly is inconsistent with the Louisiana Supreme Court. And they cite some cases. This is how Idaho does it. This is how Massachusetts does it. But as the court's well aware, the district court sitting in diversity had no choice but to follow the Louisiana Supreme Court and how they've interpreted the statute, and that is the day it's due. So their argument that we should not use payable to mean due, but capable of receiving payment, is just entirely inconsistent with Boren. And even if we didn't have the Boren decision, this cornerstone argument of how we use payable would still fail under the rules of strict construction. At best, Conseco is saying, well, payable could mean due, or it could mean capable of being paid. And the rules of strict construction on not only insurance contracts, but this is a prohibitory law, says if there's an ambiguity, we have to construe it in favor of the insured. So even if we didn't have the Boren decision, between the two, the court was correct in construing it strictly in favor of the insured. So since the operative date under Boren is due, and Conseco admits that the obligation became due, it arose on December 12, 2010, that is the operative date. The other problem with Conseco's analysis is it freely interchanges the terms default, lapse, and termination. So another key building block of their argument is, well, we gave you this notice before we actually canceled the policy. But termination and the day that the obligation was due or a default occurred are not one and the same. This happens all the time in contract law. One party defaults, they have a period of time to cure the default, and if not, obligations are rescinded. The date that a default occurs, or a date a mortgage is defaulted and the actual foreclosure happens, those are not one and the same. An example of this is in First American, a case from the Fifth Circuit cited by both parties, where the due date arose, and then 61 days later, just as in this case, the policy terminated. But the operative date is when the payment becomes due, not when it ultimately terminates. To use those terms interchangeably to mean the same thing is incorrect. The crux of the argument also overlooks what a grace period is. They say, look, we contracted to allow you 61 more days. That's an extension. But a grace period is not a change in a due date. By definition, it is an extra period of time to cure the default. You can't start the grace period unless the due date's already paid.
That's just not how grace period is used in this policy. That may be how it's used in a regular life insurance policy, a term or a whole life. It's just not how it works here.
Your Honor, I think we have to, the policy does not define grace period. It uses the caption and then explains how long the grace period will work for 61 days. But if we're going to use the plain language, which Louisiana law requires us to do, what is the ordinary meaning of a term used in the insurance policy?
Well, you have to look at how it's used in this policy. It's not used in this policy the way it is used in other types of policies. It just isn't.
I don't understand the distinguishing characteristic, and this is why, and I'll explain it, and I apologize if I'm misstating your position, but if they agree that the obligation arose on December 12, 2010, and then this grace period allowed an extra 61 days.
The obligation to pay the premium arose on February, whatever it was, 11, and that's when the premium had to be paid under the terms of this policy.
Yeah,
it had to be paid on that date.
That's the distinction between the policy and the statute. If the policy may have allowed extra time, but 22905 requires notice as the operative date of when the obligation to pay, when is it due? When does the obligation arise to pay that policy? Even though the parties agree to allow more time, which is what Boring talked about, even if you contract for additional time, it has no effect on 22905 as a prohibitory law. So even if the policy does say, okay, we allow you 61 more days past the time this obligation arises, that doesn't change when notice is required under 22905. And the parties can agree to do those things, and that's fine. Technically, the parties could come to a consent. They have a good relationship and say, I tell you what, your policy's late. I'll give you another 3 months to do it. But that doesn't change the statutory notice requirements, which must be strictly mandated or strictly adhered to on 22905. And that's what Boring said. It doesn't matter. It's a prohibitory law. You can't change the terms of our law. You can allow extra time to pay. You can make those agreements as freedom of contract, but it doesn't change what we're requiring you to do under statute.
Did you argue below to the district court that the operative date was December whatever?
We argued that none of the notices were sufficient.
The district court, this sprang fully blown from the head of Zeus, namely the district judge, didn't it? I mean, and now you're supporting him, and that's what we all hope one will do with judges. But that wasn't your idea to begin with.
Well, I would say, to be frank, yes and no. What we said in the motion to dismiss was not October whatever is the operative date. In the original motion for summary judgment, is that none of these pleadings or none of these notices fit it, because the grace period started on December 12th, which meant as of that date the policy was past due. So the one annual notice sent prior to that did not provide the correct amount, and anyone after that, by definition as a grace notice, did not predate the time that the obligation to pay arose. So, but we did, to be candid, initially say, hey, we thought the annual premium notice that you first sent us was the date, and we argued off of that. But I think what the district court did was proper, is the summary judgment standard is to look to the substance of the pleadings, and they went through and said, grace notices can't meet this statute, the requirement, because they are after lapse, and the other ones don't comply. I think the district court was looking to the substance of the pleadings, even if we did not adequately flesh out all those issues.
Yep, that's responsive.
Would you address the issue about the 1 year after the 1 year lapse and the payment that you said you were going to?
Sure, Judge. Thank you for getting me there. The statute provides an automatic 1 year continuation of coverage if it is not strictly complied with. What the Supreme Court said in Boring is that if you don't comply with it, your termination is illegal and of no effect, to quote them directly. So, and the Louisiana law operates as a nullity, as if it never happened. So from that point forward, the coverage continues as if there had never been a termination under the same terms of the policy. And in this case, the terms of our policy was you could pay premiums in any time and maintain the coverage, so we tried to do that. The affidavit in the record of the accountant who called the day after the grace period, got in touch with them the following Monday and tried to pay. They didn't accept it. Now, I understand opposing counsel says, hey, there's a factual dispute. We don't agree with that. But what there's not a factual dispute on is that within that 1 year, Johnson & Johnson said, well, since you won't tell us what we owe, we applied for reinstatement, and that was declined. So there's no real dispute that Johnson & Johnson tried to pay the policy up during that period. And to respond real briefly in the time I have left, there was some argument that there's some Louisiana cases that say, oh, it's a one-year extension, and then it cuts off automatically. That's not what those cases say. Those cases address whether, if you don't pay during that year, do you have to send a second notice? And they say, no, if you didn't get any premiums during that time, you don't have to send a second notice. But
are they obligated to accept the attempt to pay the premium?
My briefly responding, they are, Your Honor, and two reasons. The one is that it continues on as if nothing had ever changed. Their attempted termination is a nullity. And the second is the stated purpose that this court recognized in First American and relying on Lemoyne, an intermediate Louisiana case, is that the purpose is to protect the insured from losing coverage. If we adopt Conseco's approach, as soon as they fail to do what they're supposed to do by give notice, that cuts it off at 1 year. It doesn't matter if we're just like this case where they've paid in $1.2 million in premiums. They can unilaterally decide, I'm not going to give notice, and automatic cut off. There's nothing they can do about it to redeem it. The purpose of the statute is to give them an opportunity to pay. So to construe it that their violation of the statute forecloses on the insured's opportunity to pay their premiums doesn't make any sense either.
Tell me again what the face amount of the policy was.
It was a $1 million policy with a $1 million rider. So it's a $2 million policy. And in the course of these 22 years, they have paid in close to $1.3 million. I can give you the exact number. It's $1,233,195.97.
I don't know where you get 97 cents.
I'm not real sure, Judge.
So that's over what span of time?
22 years.
All right, 22 years. All right, so most of that 22 years, the premiums were paid by a payment being sent in?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's the 22 times within the policy period where the premium was paid by deducting it from the cash value. Is that correct?
Well, it was paid more frequently. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Well, the briefing said there were 22 times the policy went into the grace period, which definitionally meant that the regular payment wasn't made, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, because, and that's an important distinction, is that it fell in the grace period and then they paid it because, obviously, Conseco's policy is we're not giving you notice until you're already in the grace period, which they argued in their brief jeopardized the very viability of the policy.
I just want you to ask a question.
Judge.
I'm not giving you time to make more argument. Just make sure I'm clear here. What I'm getting to is, so there was a million and something. Most of these premiums were made by whatever, check, da-da-da-da. But at some juncture here, we got 20 times in which it goes into the grace period, which means no payment was sent in, et cetera. So at the time we get to December 12th, February 11th, the grace period expired, which I take it to mean at that point there wasn't any more cash value from which the premiums could be deducted.
Well, that happened on December 12th.
December 12th, I'm sorry.
Correct, Your Honor. That, as of that date, there's zero cash value. There's no money to supply insurance.
Well, it says the cash surrender value will not cover the monthly deduction for the following month. So I don't know whether it was December 12th that it ran out of cash surrender value. It was sometime between then and February the 11th, I gather.
No, Your Honor. It comes to kind of like it's time to take the deduction to pay forward, and there was zero money to provide insurance moving forward. So as of that date, December 12th is the date they came to the cash value of the policy to continue the coverage, and as of that date, there was nothing there to provide any further coverage. And Conseco admits that in the brief, that as of December 12th, the cash value was zero.
All right. The cash value was zero because?
There had not been another premium paid into the policy.
Cash value not to be confused with face value or?
Correct, Your Honor. The cash, on this flexible premium policy is you pay in, and I'm trying to limit it to your question. You pay in, and every month they pull it out of what they need to go forward. And as of that point, not the value of the policy should she die. It would be how much have you paid in. At that point, it's zero. There's nothing to carry forward.
All right, so when the grace period triggers, there is no fund of money available within the scheme of the policy terms to pay premium, notwithstanding there might be some other dollar value associated with the policy, but under the terms, there's no fist from which anything automatically draws. It's either at that point, pay the money, as agreed to, or it hits the grace period, or it expires, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That's why the policy entered the grace period, is because there was no money.
All right, got it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I will echo previous counsel's arguments that I will now quit being nauseous, as this was my first time as well. I appreciate your patience with me.
You got your money's worth, I think. All right, Mr. Walter, straighten us out here.
Thank you, Your Honor. As I said when I first started this argument, the question is very simple.
Who wrote this policy? Must have been some lawyers, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Your Honor.
I just said who wrote this policy. Must have been some lawyers, right?
I'm not sure who wrote it, Your Honor.
Well,
it's interesting because my father happens to have been an insurance guru, and he told me when I was very young and knew nothing about any of this, don't ever buy a flexible premium life insurance policy. And he was right on the money. So.
Well, and Your Honor, when I first started, I said that this is a very simple and straightforward issue. The question is, when was the policyholder required to pay a premium under the terms of the policy? All opposing counsel had to do was come up here and tell you where in the policy it says that Johnson & Johnson was required to make a premium payment before the end of the grace period. And he didn't do it just because he can't do it. Instead, what you heard were analogies about gas tanks, the general definition of grace period that's used in other policies. You didn't get any reference to the terms of the policy. Judge Stewart, to your point, you mentioned the payment of premiums shouldn't be a mystery. What did the parties bargain for? This is exactly what the parties bargained for. They bargained to have a planned annual premium. That's the planned premium. It's not required to be paid. The plan when the policy was issued is pay this premium every year, and that will sustain the policy. You can pay more than that, or you cannot pay it at all. It gives the policyholders, and this is a sophisticated policyholder who had an accountant running this transaction for them, assumed that discretion. And then the policyholder failed to make that premium payment. And this is what's on the policy data page, really early in the policy, bold, all capital letters. It is possible that coverage will expire prior to the maturity date shown, where either no premiums are paid following payment of the initial premium, or subsequent premiums are insufficient to continue coverage to such date. There's another provision that's very similar to that. The policyholder was put on notice by everything in this policy that if you don't pay premiums, ultimately you're going to go into the grace period and the policy is going to terminate. Mr. Acasi also mentioned the issue of lapse.
Yeah, and that straighten me out on lapse.
Well, the lapse issue is nothing but a red herring argument, Your Honor. He indicated that the policy was already lapsed when the grace notices were issued in December and January of 2010 and 2011, respectively. And that's simply not true. What the grace period provision, and this is in the grace period provision, it says that the policy will lapse in the future if the premium is not paid, the sufficient premium is not paid by the end of the grace period. Now, under Louisiana law, the Louisiana Administrative Code has a definition for lapse because the Louisiana Administrative Code requires a 30-day grace period. And so that code, by law, has to define when that grace period is triggered, and the Louisiana law defines that lapse as the date when the cash surrender value is I think it says first equals zero. And so basically under Louisiana law, the effective date of lapse was December 12, 2010. But that is only the effective date. That is not, that doesn't mean that on December 13th the policy had lapsed. It was still in effect. The grace period provision specifically says that the policy will remain in force until the end of the grace period. And moreover, the statute does not measure the notice period from the date of lapse. The date of lapse under the Louisiana Administrative Code is completely irrelevant to the issue here. The issue here is when was a premium required to be paid? The premium was required to be paid before the end of the grace period. There is absolutely no basis in this policy for a finding that the policyholder was obligated to pay a premium at the time the grace period began. It was not until the end of the grace period. And with, in my closing moments here, with respect to this issue about whether to use the word payable versus the word due, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, Your Honors. The statute only applies to those premiums that are required by the terms of the policy to be paid. Regardless if you use the word payable or if you use the word due, the premium is required to be paid. And there has to be a legal obligation to pay it. That legal obligation did not arise in this case until after the policy entered the grace period. There was no legal obligation to pay the premium before that date.
So that's what are you asking us ultimately to do? Determine the correct trigger date and decide nothing else and send it back to be further straightened out, determine the correct statutory interpretation and the trigger date and go further? What's the narrowest relief you're asking from us?
The relief that I'm asking for, Your Honor, is that you reverse and render the judgment in favor of Conseco. There were cross motions for summary judgment. This is a matter of law that the court should render judgment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. Before we take the last case up,